Mic session number 31401, reel 3.
What was your attitude towards the German population in Hamburg?
I did not very much to do with them. We were in Hamburg for a short time, and then we moved down to Lippstadt. And the general thing was, if the Germans could get some English cigarettes, that was then the currency.
Were you under any instructions to avoid contact with the Germans?
Well, very much so. As a matter of fact, they used to send troops out, and we didn't have very much to do. If there was an RAFC centre, and I know that I was on one night patrol, and we knocked at this door. There seemed to be a bit of noise coming from inside there, and we were told to F off, which pleased us intensely. So I said, this is a patrol from the South Wales borders. If you don't open this door in five seconds or 10 seconds, whatever it is, we're going to blow it down. So they came out, and there were two Scots blokes, and it was funny, they were blaming each other. I wouldn't have bloody well been here if you hadn't persuaded me to come. And the other bloke was saying exactly the same thing in different terms, right? Anyway, we went. They were put under arrest and sent back to the RASC. And I don't really know what the outcome was. I don't think it was very serious anyway. I think they had a bit of the two colonels, our chap and this RASC bloke, they had a chat together, and I think they said, well, leave it alone.
What had been your reaction to the end of the war in VE Day?
Oh, just the usual, I think. Thank God that it's over. We'd seen enough casualties of our own, and there we are. That was the normal reaction. Well, we survived it.
Had you had much contact with American or other Commonwealth forces as you were moving through Europe?
No. Except that we were seconded to the Canadian Army for a very short period of time. And we had the similar sort of experience with the Americans, that for a very short time we were under their control as well. This was the brigade, the 56th Brigade was pushed in for a time, but both the Canadian and the Americans, we did have a share of that.
Did you notice any particular difference in how they operated at all?
Oh, it was more flamboyant. I can't say much about. I never saw. Oh dear, what's the word I'm trying to think of now? The battle. Oh dear. This is the trouble when you get to nearly 90 things. What the devil was that called? Battle orders. That's the only way I can put it. But the one that's much more flamboyant than the English ones. For example, the food. They outlined that, and then they said the old grey wolf. That was their flash. Looks after his own, right, and all that sort of thing, and then they come on to ammunition and how the old grey wolf was looking after that, and completely different, but arriving at the same place at the end, I suppose.
What was your opinion, in general, of the officers and the senior officers in the South Wales Borderers?
Oh, I couldn't say anything derogatory to any of them. Actually, they were all. There was one outstanding chap. He was a baby-faced major, Chickle. He was nicknamed Chickle, but he was the bravest man. He got an MC. He should have had more than an MC. He should have had a DSO, that chap. But it was his. He looked just about a boy of 19, actually, but he was the bravest of the brave. That's the only way to put it. And he died very young. He wasn't killed in the war. He didn't switch over to from his old job. He was a map maker, but he was wonderful. He was absolutely fantastic. Everybody thought the world of him. But to see him, just Chickle Collins, yeah. But as I say, the bravest of the brave.
Do you have any opinions as to the general Allied strategy as a whole in the advance across Europe?
Oh no, I couldn't get involved in that because I wasn't in the whole scene. I was too far below that. I couldn't criticise what happened in the upper ranks of the British Army or even the Yankee Army or the Canadian Army.
If we go back a bit now, would you be able to talk a little bit about the preparations for D-Day?
Well, yes. I mean, the preparation was we were in the third division when Montgomery was the divisional commander, and he was a right sod if ever there was one. You'd have to run across ploughed fields with full kit, and there was nothing worse than that. Running on a road is different to running across a ploughed field with all your kit on your back, because he was quite right. You'd have to do it sometime, And the forced marches that we used to have under Montgomery, you'd have to do 20 odd miles at night, moving without a break. Food was, the rations were cut down to a minimum. I think it's 2 ounces of bread or some silly nonsense that went on. But it basically, it was right, because he knew that sometime you'd have to go without, and sometime you had to move without transport.
Did that cause any resentment towards him?
Oh, he wasn't a popular man. He never looked for popularity anyway. The only time I ever saw him was we were going up towards the Siegfried Line, and it was the weather had been very, very bad, and the road was one mass of mud, and all of a sudden all these outriders came along, and it was Monty was in his car, and he stopped by the padre, and he asked the padre, was there anything that was required? And he said, yes, sir. we haven't any cigarettes. And we, of course, he was a non-smoker. And I don't know about drink. I would think that he was a TT as well. So the beer and the cigarettes. But the following week, there was 100,000 cigarettes sent with Monty's best wishes, right? I don't know about the beer. Then, of course, he was a field marshal and not a brigadier. What's the one up from the brigade? Divisional. He was divisional commander. Then he was, of course, he commanded the army.
At what stage did you become aware that D-Day and the attack on Europe would...
We didn't know the date at all. We knew it was imminent. Everybody seemed to know it was imminent. But my wife sent me a photograph, which I received a few days before D-Day, a photograph of her. And so she was aware. I mean, all this business of the stuff going towards the ports all over the place. Everybody was aware that something was big was going on, but nobody knew where or when.
Was there an excitement and enthusiasm that you were aware of?
Well, At the time, I don't think they no. Difficult to say, really. Because, as I say, we knew that it was imminent, but when and where was two was different matters. I mean, obviously, they'd taken it Dover to Calais was the main thought. Nobody envisaged that we would be coming from and going into France at that in that area.
If we go back even further now, could you explain a bit about what happened to you when you were first called up in 1939?
Oh, it was chaotic, actually. The food was horrible. They'd taken in so many people. There was people who should never have been thought of as cooks. They had no training whatsoever. The food was pretty awful. Horrific might have been a better word, right?
What sort of things were you being fed?
Oh, you had the usual stuff in the morning. Porridge. I don't know what followed porridge, to be quite frank, but it was the plates that you must have had your own plate, and that was reminiscent of the 1914-18 wars. They just withdrawn them again, right? Because all the knife cuts on the steel was there. And rough old basins for tea. The food coming in from civilian life into that life was quite a shake-up, actually.
How did you find adjusting to the military lifestyle and the discipline?
It didn't seem too hard. It was very rough for about the first fortnight. You had to fill your palliass with straw, and you slept on the floor. No beds for about a fortnight. Then the beds came in. But it was a rough old time. And one of the problems, I think, was that a lot of the senior NCOs were, when I say senior NCOs, sergeants, were hoping to be company sergeant majors, and that was going very strongly, actually. Rapid promotion was the order of the day.
What about the training itself?
Oh, the training itself, well, it was pretty rough, actually. Suddenly, you're on a 20-mile march, which you never experienced before, and the reaction physically, your feet and other parts of your body was pretty difficult to accept, but training went on, and gradually you acclimatized yourself to it.
What did you have in the way of firearms training?
Well, you were trained on the rifle. You were trained on the Bren gun. You were trained on throwing the Miller's bombs. You were trained on the mortar. So you were fairly good, or you should have been fairly good on what we were trained to do, right?
What might an average day have consisted of during the training period?
Well, after breakfast, it could be a route march. It could be route march. Seemed to be one of the essentials that you had to learn to walk without having any trouble. There was, to me, there was insufficient training on either the rifle. More tea. There's insufficient training on both the rifles and the Bren gun, as far as I could see. The it was once in a blue moon, really, as far as rifle training was concerned, and I think that was an essential thing.
Did you receive much training in the way of tactics and military theory?
Tactics, yes. Military theory, no, I don't think so.
What did the tactics involve?
You never moved without you were covered. If you take just a platoon, three sections in the platoon, whatever problem there was, it's one platoon forward, one section forward, two covering, and that was the basis of it. That movement was under control. No people flocking. Every time you moved, there was cover fire for you, okay?
Did you find that the training was useful and relevant when it came to...
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yeah.
How much did you get in the way of off-duty time or leave while you were under training?
No, leave was a matter of the gods, I think. There must have been some form of control, but it seemed that you're going on leave next week, and I don't know where they got that from, but leave wasn't too bad, actually. I'm trying to work out what how much leave there was. No, Let's say that it was adequate anyway.
What would most people do during the leave itself? What would most people do?
What would most people
with their period of leave? How did they spend it?
Oh, the nearest place for home. That was the essential. As quick as they could get.
Where was it that you were being trained?
Where? Well, wherever we were stationed. The training went on just the same. For example, for D-Day, we went up to Loch Fyne or Loch Fyne. I don't know which way you'd say that. Train, and it was just a load of nonsense, to be quite frank. They had barbed wire, and then you had to jump off these landing craft into water, run up the little bit of beach. Then you'd have these this wire. Then one fellow would have to jump on the wire with his rifle held, and then you'd make an indentation on the wire, and they would run through on his run across him and get into the inside of the wire. That was it in its simplest form. And then they had downpipes, not the plastic ones, the metal ones, and they would be full of explosives. I never experienced that. I never saw them blowing up the wire, the barbed wire, through firing this, whatever they called it. It was just a, as I say, a downpipe full of explosive, which would blow the wire away, make a hole in it for you to pass through. Nothing like that ever occurred on D-Day itself.
How was it that you'd come to join the South Wales Borderers specifically?
Was that I didn't join. I was called up.
Did you have any choice in
the? No, none at all. South Wales Borderers. Nearly everybody that, except the chappie that I was really friendly with, he went to the RASC, and I went to the South Wales Borderers. In the lap of the gods, actually, where you went. But the bulk of them was going into the infantry anyway.
What was the sense of identity and spirit among the?
Oh, I think once you joined the South Wales Borderers, it was instilled into you that the you needn't try to do anything that was clever. The regiment itself was good enough on its own. What were the VCs that they'd won at Rock's Drift and all the rest of it, and then in the First World War, where one of the chaps had won the VC, Distinguished Conduct Medal and the Military Medal, which was quite something.